AM on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT a continuación de International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT next, the International Radio Report.
I'm Brian Penny of Brewster, Massachusetts. You're tuned to the International Radio Report. 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Sunday, January the 28th, 2024. We thank you for tuning in to our show. My name is Sheldon. Gilles is with me. And we have 30 minutes of news and information from the world of radio for you. A lot of different things going on. A truly international show today. We'll get to the stories in just a moment. We have an email address for you if you'd like to get in touch with us. It is radioreport@yahoo.com. Our program is live streamed and archived at ckut.ca, the website of CKUT Radio in Montreal. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report, we invite you to join it. There are 954 members there. Our YouTube channel, look for us, International Radio Report at IRR on YouTube. You can subscribe there as well. We have 939 subscribers at the present time. And our X account at IRRCKUT, and you can follow us there as well. So we will get things going on a busy day. Lots of different stories for you. First off, a reminder. We talked about it in depth last week, and it is World Radio Day, UNESCO's World Radio Day, which will be coming up on February the 13th. If you were tuned in to the show last week, you would have heard a couple of the World Radio Day minutes that have been prepared by UNESCO to promote the event. We'll be running a couple of those on each show leading up to February the 13th. And we hope to have some information on various events that will be going on around the world. We know that Radio Romania will be doing some special programming. We'll have more details on that for you. The theme for World Radio Day this year is Radio, a Century Informing, Entertaining, and Educating. And we'll put a link up to the website. If you just look for World Radio Day under UNESCO, you'll find all the information. There's lots of tips on what you can do to mark the occasion. So check those out. And as I said, we'll have more information over the next few weeks leading up to the event on the 13th.
Presenting a World Radio Day Minute, proclaimed in 2011 by UNESCO and endorsed by the United Nations General Assembly in 2012 as a UN International Day, February 13 is World Radio Day.
What is radio's greatest asset in competing with television, movies, videos, and other visual media brought to the user via a screen? It's the remarkable ability of the human brain and consciousness to generate imagination. The power of the spoken word to tell stories, enhanced in some cases by music and emotion, is virtually unlimited. Radio broadcasters are neither restricted by financial budgets in setting a scene nor physical boundaries in building a set. Reporters need not be accompanied by camera crews to cover fast-breaking news events. They are only limited by their own language skills, powers of observation, and passion. That's why radio is the theater of the mind. This has been a World Radio Day Minute from UNESCO.
So we also have a event coming up. Actually, it's going to be a weekly event now. And it's something we talked in the past. We had these broadcasts coming up from time to time from Alaska, KSKO in McGrath, Alaska, that will return to shortwave. This is via Allen Row in Tennington, UK. So Paul Walker has advised that KSKO, which broadcasts the local community in McGrath, Alaska, will return on shortwave for an hour every Friday. So the schedule is 21 to 22 hours universal time. The first broadcast happened on Friday, 21 to 22 UTC, on 5900 kilohertz via Spaceline Bulgaria will be a relay of the midday to 1 p.m. and the afternoon show on KSKO. There are not likely to be any QSLs for this transmission, but if you do listen, please let Paul know so that this relay will continue going forward. So we have the email that is paul@alaskaradionerd.com. And thank you, Paul, for arranging this broadcast and creating something different to listen to on shortwave. So 21 to 22 UTC on 5900 kilohertz every Friday.
Yeah, that should propagate fairly well, at least in the winter months, which we're in right now in our neck of the woods. So check that out. And interesting to have a domestic radio station being relayed at least for an hour every week on shortwave. Our next story comes from the New York Times by Andrew Kramer and Maria Varenikova. And the headline, as missiles strike, a radio station broadcasts the rage of a battered city. It was the middle of the night in early January when a Russian missile streaked in and exploded in the center of Kharkiv, blasting down walls and shattering windows. The next day, people went shopping and to work, ate out in restaurants, and clogged the streets with traffic jams, almost as if nothing had happened. But behind the business-as-usual veneer, residents of Kharkiv have been seething. Over the past month, Ukraine's second-largest city has taken the brunt of Russia's missile campaign, which has killed and wounded dozens of people, blown up buildings, and unnerved everyone. It's an almost daily torment to vent. Kharkiv's residents have dedicated outlet, Radio Boiling Over, a new FM radio station. This is boiling over in the morning, Volodymyr Noskov, the host of the morning call-in show, said on a recent broadcast. What are you boiling over about today? Amid the carnage, Radio Boiling Over, which went on the air a year ago, is becoming one of the most popular local media outlets. It serves as a megaphone for the fears and frustrations that simmer within a population under near constant assault. Despite all Russia is doing, the city is still living, said Yevhen Stritsov, the founder of Radio Boiling Over. But, he said, people are getting tired because their nerves are not made of iron and they want to complain. Burn in hell until the seventh generation. Curse the unwashed Russians, a listener wrote on the station's Instagram page after one high-casualty missile attack. The station broadcasts hourly news updates and talk shows in the morning and evening with a focus on missile strikes, interviews with soldiers on the front line 100 or so miles east, investigations of Russian war crimes, and of course the anger of hundreds of thousands of people forced to worry daily about their safety. The station's name, Radio Nakipilo, can also be translated as Radio Fed Up. It receives funding from the National Endowment for Democracy, an American nonprofit financed by the U.S. government, and the European Endowment for Democracy, with the mission of covering local news in a community that, even by the standards of Ukraine's battered cities, has endured a harrowing 23 months. Yet despite the mortal threat, ballistic missile strikes have become so common in Kharkiv that Radio Boiling Over does not interrupt its music programming if only one missile has landed, Mr. Yevhen said. Announcers will cut in only for volleys or a catastrophic strike. Radio Boiling Over's mission is to capture that reality and give people an outlet to let off steam, as well as provide useful, practical information. On a recent evening, it was reporting on a missile strike in the Kharkiv region, but not in the city. One woman was killed. The station was taking calls. We'll just start the program with a very important topic, said the anchor, Philip Dykin. Kharkiv is getting bombed. You've all seen it. Please call to tell us what is boiling over with you. The government gave Radio Boiling Over space on the FM spectrum for two purposes: to report local news and to jam a Russian psychological warfare operation that had been beaming in news on the soldiers, including repeating the phrase, "We will kill you." With the switch to Radio Boiling Over, people started to tune in, Mr. Stritsov said. People listen because we are fast with news about missile strikes and fighting along the front nearby, he said. Roman Korobenko, a reporter with the station, said people younger than 40 who came of age after the Soviet breakup were fed up with Russia. Older residents had mixed feelings, he said, sometimes lamenting that war had come even though Russians and Ukrainians had previously lived in peace. As he reports the news, Mr. Korobenko said he looks for unexpected angles on the attacks beyond the monotonous tally of dead and wounded. Very good that they're getting financial support from a couple different sources as well to let people, you know, vent their frustrations. And I, you know, you see videos and you see news reports and listen to reports, and you just wonder, you know, how people are surviving through that sort of daily pressures on them. Yeah. It's really quite depressing when you see it.
In our next news story, we have Israel's AM radio that pierces Gaza tunnels in bid to soothe hostages. And this is by Dan Williams, Reuters News Service. Jerusalem, January 22nd. After conquering a Hamas tunnel in the northern Gaza Strip, a group of Israeli soldiers went down it with some unusual kit in hand. Not explosives, robot probes, or pistols for close combat, but rather old-style dial-operated transistor radios. Their mission was to descend until the devices could no longer receive AM transmissions from Israel. That point, they found, was about 10 to 12 meters depth, generally the upper stories of Palestinian militants' subterranean network. The January 4th experiment was ordered by their commander at the behest of Israeli communications minister Shlomo Karhi, who had just expanded the country's most popular broadcaster, Army Radio, from industry standard FM into complementary AM channels. AM's greater range meant emergency updates would have a better chance of being heard by civilians in bomb shelters. Troops in Gaza would also benefit, as they were being allowed transistor radios to keep themselves informed while being asked to surrender their cell phones lest those be geolocated by Hamas. The tunnel experiment dangled another possibility for a country tormented with worry for 132 people held hostage by Hamas-led gunmen in the enclave, reaching out to them with custom-composed morale-raising army radio broadcasts. It suddenly occurred to me that maybe some of those hostages also had access to transistor radios. If they had the means to hear their families' voices, it would have a huge value in terms of morale and for their relatives, too. The gambit would likely heed Hamas Corporation, a prospect its initiators hope is within the bounds of possibility. Hamas officials in Gaza were not immediately available for comment on the idea, a testament to Palestinians' shattered infrastructure under an Israeli offensive, as well as their reluctance to release information on the hostages' conditions. Of scores of hostages freed in a November truce, several said captors had allowed them limited access to TVs or radios. One of them learned from the radio that her husband and daughter, from whom she had been separated during the October 7 cross-border Hamas killing and kidnapping spree that sparked the war, had survived. For another, an Israeli broadcast was the first notification that two relatives were among the dead. But the accounts often left unclear whether the hostages were kept just under the surface or in tunnels well out of range or in above-ground safe houses with regular reception. Tunnels shown to journalists by advancing Israeli forces have sometimes included upper levels of about 10 meters depth. Asked to respond to the Army Radio Initiative, ex-hostage Nili Margalit said part of her captivity was spent 40 meters underground. It is too deep, she told Reuters, declining to discuss the matter further for fear that the terrorists will use my words to hurt the captives that are still there. Dan O'Shea, a former Navy SEAL and hostage coordinator for U.S. forces in Iraq, said that while he completely agrees with the AM radio initiative, he saw scant chance for Hamas cooperating while Israel pursues search and rescue operations in Gaza. If Hamas knew that these radios could be picked up by Israeli forces, it's the last thing they would want, he said. They're paranoid about anything that's going on to track an IDF bomb to their position. Peter Duffett-Smith, emeritus reader in astrophysics at the University of Cambridge Cavendish Laboratory, said AM transistor radios, which are designed to passively receive broadcast, cannot easily be traced, but he did not rule it out. Most such radios use oscillators, which emit faint signals, he said, and it is possible that these could be detected at a distance using specialized equipment. These signals decrease rapidly with distance, especially through ground. I don't think being scared of the AM radio being tracked is much of a problem, especially if regular signals have a hard time going underground.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, both sides, of course, though, will be able to hear those broadcasts. So yeah, they'd have to be, you know, a little careful about the content, I guess, of the broadcasts as well. Because certainly, you know, they're radio signals and anybody can tune them in. So that has to be taken into consideration, I'm sure.
So what's happening with our sun? Well, the sun this week was very active with a sunspot that was actually crackling with flares. And they thought it would create a geomagnetic storm, which finally didn't happen. Things seem to be quieting down a little bit, although there are still possibilities of flares from two sunspot groups. And there is also something that could happen today, tomorrow, and on January the 30th, a coronal hole that will actually send some solar wind. So conditions might actually be a little disturbed this week. And, of course, to witness all of the propagation conditions, you need a radio, and you turn it on.
I'm Thomas Witherspoon of Asheville, North Carolina, and you're tuned to the International Radio Report, 30 minutes of news about radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Presenting a World Radio Day Minute, proclaimed in 2011 by UNESCO and endorsed by the United Nations General Assembly in 2012 as a UN International Day, February 13 is World Radio Day.
We all love our screens. There's an old saying, a picture is worth a thousand words. But that only goes so far, even though computer screens are seemingly everywhere, even on our watches. It's inconvenient and even dangerous to watch visual media or to read while driving, running, multitasking, or working on something that requires observational concentration. How about when trying to fall asleep? Even when your head is tilted sideways, radio's message is always straight. There's a lot to be said for the basic convenience and flexibility of the spoken word music sound and the sense of hearing. Yes, radio is true mobile media and certainly easy on the eyes. This has been a World Radio Day Minute from UNESCO.
Our next story is from Afghanistan. It is supplied by radioinfo.asia. And the headline, a private radio station forced to close in cost. According to the Afghanistan Journalist Center, or AFJC, private radio station NAN in southeastern Khost province has been abruptly shut down by local Taliban officials, citing, quote, a legal issue. Established in 2010, the station produces and broadcasts various programs covering politics, society, culture, sports, and religion. It is accessible on 89.1 FM in Khost and its surrounding areas. An employee of NAN Radio told AFJC, the security forces of the Khost Police Command arrived at the radio building in the 2nd District of Khost at around 12 noon. While threatening the employees, they forcibly removed the devices and equipment from Radio NAN from this building. They kicked out the media and closed its gate. He added, following this action, NAN Radio stopped working and the employees were also ordered to leave the place. Four employees of NAN Radio were arrested while evacuating the media building and released after about 2 hours. However, Safir Mohammed Zadran, one of the owners of the radio station, who was arrested a week ago, has not been released until now. But Tahir Arar, the spokesman for the Taliban police in the Khost province, told AFJC, today's action by the security forces was based on the verdict of the Khost primary court. the court ruled that the owners of the radio station should vacate the building due to non-payment of monthly rent, and this ruling was implemented today. Arar added, "We have no problem with the continuation of non-radio. The owner of the radio can move his equipment to another place and reopen the radio in accordance with the law." AFJC said that it is important to note that Article 4 of Afghanistan's media law, which is held as applicable by the Taliban government, expressly prohibits any real person or authority from restricting, censoring, or interfering with the free activity of news and information media. AFJC expressed serious concern over this incident and stressed the necessity for implementing the media law and urges the local officials in Khost province to facilitate the swift reopening of this local media outlet. Sounds like a repeat of many stories we've had over the last year or so with stations that the government doesn't want people to hear, find a way to shut them down.
Yep, that definitely is a big problem. And Afghanistan has been actually very, very complicated for radio stations. It's been complicated also, as we talked about, some of the women-run radio stations that they don't like to have on the air much. So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
Yeah, before the contest, there's actually one special station on the air that if you're a ham operator, you've maybe not had the chance to ever contact someone at this location, at least not for a very long time. The location is Clipperton Island. And I had to look it up. I think you looked it up as well. I didn't quite know where Clipperton Island was. It is off the western coast of Mexico in the Pacific. It's a very strange location. It's called an atoll. It's a narrow strip of land that circles around a body of fresh water, it looks like. So a very odd place. There is a ham radio operation, de-expedition there, probably until the end of the month. Their call sign is Tango X-Ray 5 Sierra. Tango X-Ray 5 Sierra. They're working all bands, all modes. You've worked them on FT8. I've been listening for them and have had them on like four or five bands already. They're very, very active, putting out very good signals. So you may want to check them out. They're doing radio teletype as well and CW voice, FT8. So again, check them out. They're on all the DX spotting sites. Tango X-Ray 5 Sierra from Clipperton Island.
Yep. So I worked them on FT8 and three bands, and I did try. I tried hard. I mean, one of the times was on 10 meters, probably sent my call at least for an hour and a half before I decided to stop. The pileup is very, very big, and it's difficult to get there. And they're always split. So remember that, because so many guys out there are just transmitting on their frequencies. So they're always like 5 to 10 up in the split mode. And they are, of course, on the air for the next few days. Check it out. You know, it's unusual. And hopefully, maybe I'll be able to get them. They seem to be using almost always the same frequencies when they're available. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that one of them, 28485, is that's been used almost every day. So probably look there and look at all the bands, and the spotting sites are going to help you out.
Yeah, they're even using 12 meter band, 17 meter band, you know, some of the ones that aren't used as much. If you're a listener and you just want to hear their station, it's quite easy to do because they're working split frequency. If you sit on their frequency that they're transmitting on, you basically hear them constantly working the stations that have been calling them 5 to 10. Even more, and I think I saw they were working widespread, like 20 kilohertz or something. So anyways, been hearing them very well on almost every band so far. I have a couple more I want to look for. So, and good luck if you're trying to break through the pileups. So we have a lot of ham radio activity going on next weekend, contest galore, starting with the Vermont CUSO party, 0-100 February 3rd to 2359 Zulu February 4th. That's organized by the Radio Amateurs of Northern Vermont. It's all modes, 160 through 10 meters, as well as VHF and UHF.
There's the 1010 International Winder Contest, SSB, from 0-1 Zulu February 3rd. 2359 Zulu February 4th, organized by 1010 International. It is single sideband and 10 meters only.
The European Union DXCC group is holding the European Union DX contest, 1200 Zulu February 3rd to 1200 Zulu February the 4th. It's 10 meters through 160, no work bands, and it is a single sideband contest.
There's the Mexico RTTY International Contest, 1200 Zulus February 3rd to 2359 Zulu February 4th, organized by the Federación Mexicana de Radio Experimentadores, and it's RTTY 80 through 10 meters.
This one's kind of funny. Organized by the Arizona Scorpions, the FYBO QRP Winter Sprint. What does FYBO stand for? It stands for Freeze Your Butt Off, and their winter QRP sprint runs from 1400 to 2359 Zulu February the 3rd. Modes are SSB and CW, and it's all EHF bands, but it is low power QRP only.
It's always relative. I mean, yes, it can get cold in Arizona sometimes, but, you know, you don't freeze your butt off the same here and there.
They don't really know what cold is unless they've lived in some of the northern regions.
There's the Minnesota CUSO party, 1400 Zulu to 2359 Zulu February 3rd, organized by the Minnesota Wireless Association. It's SSB, CW, RTTY, and digital modes. And it's 160 through 10 meters.
And those guys do know what cold is all about in Minnesota. We have the AGCW Straight Key Party, 1600 Zulu to 1900 Zulu, February the 3rd. That is organized by the German Telegraphy Activity Group, CW only, and it's just on 80 meters.
There's the British Columbia QSO Party, 1600 Zulu, February 3rd to 2359 Zulu, February 4th. Organized by the Orca DX and Contest Club. Bands are at 160 through 10 meters, no work bands, and it's phone and CW.
And finally, the North American Sprint CW, 0-100 to 0-400 February the 4th. It's organized by the National Contest Journal. 80, 40, and 20 meter bands only, and it is CW.
And we are out of time.
Thank you very much for tuning in. We will do it all again next week on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We thank you for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody. Lots of ham radio activity going on out there. And as Jill always says, turn your radio on. There's lots of interesting things to listen to out there. Talk to you next Sunday. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Presenting a World Radio Day Minute, proclaimed in 2011 by UNESCO and endorsed by the United Nations General Assembly in 2012 as a UN International Day, February 13 is World Radio Day.
In times of emergency, such as natural disasters or the destruction of war, we're reminded of the fragility of our modern infrastructure. The public, dependent on the electric grid, the internet, and the computer, is vulnerable to breakdowns in communication. That's why AM/FM radio has been called the first responder of media. It's to the advantage of everyone, including governments, to maintain and protect emergency radio frequencies for the public dissemination of vital information. When the lights go out and the internet shuts down, an increasingly common occurrence, broadcast radio serves as an invaluable lifeline. Be sure your home and car are equipped at all times with a self-powered portable radio and fresh batteries. This has been a World Radio Day Minute from UNESCO.
You are listening to The Free Kick on CKUT. Hey, everyone, let's have a party.
Some people like to rock, some people like to roll, but moving and a grooving's gonna satisfy the soul. Let's have a party. Woo, let's have a party. Send me to the store, let's buy some more, let's have a party tonight. I've never kissed a bear, I've never kissed a goon, but I can shake a chicken in a minute.